Hello, good evening. This is John Hall. I'm the host for today's show. My partner is Dr. Joyner, but tonight I'm the host, and this is the program for life-threatening diseases. We're on every other Monday, and today is very exciting in the sense that I have many offerings for you, particularly if you have cancer or have a family member with cancer. I came across something in a newspaper today here in the local Sacramento area. In the Sacramento News and Review, there's a fellow by the name of Jeff Bonkalel, who writes an article on eating your fruits and veggies. Now, that's not new to a lot of people. What is new here is Kaiser Permanente, which is the largest managed care hospital medical program in the state of California, maybe even nationally, I'm not sure. They have tested a new wonder drug prescription. This is incredible when you hear this. Kaiser Foundation has a new wonder drug. Take it at any meal or on an empty stomach. It helps reduce weight and lower the risk of diabetes, of heart attacks, and numerous other diseases. It is very safe with no side effects. And what's more, it even tastes great. The name of this new medicine is the Fruit and Vegetable Prescription Program. Kaiser has started to prescribe the purchase of fruits and vegetables at farmers markets for young, overweight patients. One of the places that Kaiser has been testing the program is in Washington, D.C. On a recent trip to Washington, D.C., my good friend Gus Schumacher suggested that I meet him at his Georgetown house at 8 a.m. Saturday morning to go, quote, farmers marketing, unquote. This is sort of like clubbing, except instead of taking a taxi instead of taking a taxi to a bar or various nightclubs, one takes the taxi to various farmers markets. I always enjoy hanging out with Gus, and I wanted to learn more about Kaiser's fruit and vegetable program. Gus is a great guy. He went to Harvard College. He worked at the World Bank, serving as the Undersecretary of Agriculture for the United States Department of Agriculture. And now he's the Executive Vice President of Policy for Wholesome Wave. This organization, Wholesome Wave, has received support from Paul Newman's own foundation, which has an innovative program that enables food stamp recipients to double their purchase at farmers markets. Wholesome Wave runs the Kaiser program in Washington, D.C. And Gus is one of the few working Americans who is actually older than I am. I am 61. He has twice the energy of most people half his age. We arrived early at our first farmer's market, located in a low-income D.C. neighborhood. Gus knew one of the farmers, so we helped unload the trucks while talking to the farmers about sales. We learned that sales had been good, and soon Gus and I were off for more farmer marketing. Our next farmer's market was in a gentrified part of D.C. next to a metro stop and a yuppie hippie restaurant here. Here we spoke with the person who assisted the Kaiser patients. Here's what happens over there in D.C. Patients receive a voucher that enable them to buy food at the farmer's market. The Kaiser Wholesome Wave worker was enthusiastic about the program and the results. The data from the Kaiser study has been impressive, providing each member of the family with a weekly $7 farmer's market prescription has led to significant improvement in body mass index of each person. When I spoke with the farmers at this market, they were also very happy with the Kaiser program. It led to more sales. Although I don't expect farmers marketing to replace clubbing anytime soon, I'd be happy to see thousands of Americans bringing their fruit and vegetable prescription to local farmers markets. And why not? I'm all for a medicine that helps us healthy and tastes great. So that's the kickoff for our program tonight. We have quite a program here tonight. I don't have a visitor or a guest speaker. However, we're going to be talking tonight about the big picture as to what works to heal the body and what doesn't work. We may spin off in the next section on how cancer research has failed. And if we have time, we'll go into our third topic, which is, and this is assuming that people are new with cancer, choosing MDs or holistic nutritionists, naturopaths, and their choice of treatment. So we'll begin with the big picture. Albert Einstein posited once, and this is a quote, "By academic freedom, I understand that the right to search for the truth and to publish and teach what one holds to be true implies also a duty. One must not conceal any part of what knows to be true." And here I'm referencing medical doctors and the medical profession. "I have evidence cancer," this is me talking now, "I have evidence cancer can be cured and not just improved. My own case is one of recovering from melanoma in the lymph system, and that's over the last 3.5 years. And now my system is clean of cancer. So, I was told in the beginning, melanoma is supposed to kill a person within 6 months or less. But let's be clear about one thing. If we're talking about miracle cures, this is not my understanding of what happens. Instead, I learned it is all about feeding the body with correct food and drinks so that the body's own natural defenses can kick in and do the work. It is the foods that builds up the immune system to make it stronger, not some injected chemical from the outside." Yes, I can hear people talking now. There are a few exceptions to using only natural ways. Chemotherapy for testicular cancer, for example, it worked in some cases. Didn't work in all cases. Worked for juvenile leukemia in some cases. And it worked in a few early detected breast cancers. However, the bulk of cancer diagnosed patients, according to the NCI statistics, National Cancer Institute statistics, will die before the end of the fifth year. My contention is that the new paradigm in America must be in a direction to get the cancer cells to stop dividing by repairing the NK cells, the natural killer cells, the T cells, and the IGF-1 proteins. All get them to all work in unison. Am I totally against conventional practices of the allopathic doctors or conventional doctors? No, but I believe patients must be able to choose between healing themselves from within or outside in. And each person needs to be clear that there are side effects from chemotherapy and radiation which can be torturous, and that there's no guarantee of recovery. And thus, freedom of choice implies each person diagnosed with cancer should be given complete information before their surgery, whether it comes from naturopathic doctors or allopathic physicians. Again, prior to the surgery. It's also accurate that not everyone survives by using either approach. I want to emphasize that taking herbs, antioxidants, fruits, and veggies or supplements, that there are virtually no side effects. I'm witness to that. I suffered no side effects. Yet the side effects from chemo and radiation are degrading, torturous, painful, and potentially destructive. And they cause an attack on healthy immune cells, which lowers a patient's chance for recovery. To support their position, the allopaths will cite testicular cancer cures and two others. Yet, the bulk of their treatment clearly does not work at all. A few more comments on freedom, on the freedom to choose. Freedom to choose is a great freedom, but if a patient has certain information withheld from him or her, is that really freedom? Allopathic doctors in hospitals might say, well, the naturopathics are quacks, and they do no research to prove the efficacy of their plants and herbs. You know what I discovered in my research to answer that question? That doctors and the pharmaceutical companies don't want to know the answer. At the federal level and through the larger nonprofit charities, they refuse to fund research overall. They're not funding research programs to show the positive effects of nutritional remedies. There's a few exceptions, but they intentionally block the search. They're all about inventing chemicals in the laboratory, mixing them with some natural products so they can sell them at high prices. You could put on the table a natural substance which cures cancer, and they would go into denial, put their heads under the rugs, and continuing doing their chemical research to try to cure cancer from the outside. Our bodies need to be cured from the inside with healthy, natural substances. The proof is in. And that's what my book is all about. Beating cancer can be fun. I have another book coming probably by the end of the year, which will cite many, many more foods and supplements which will cure cancer and stop it in its tracks. From a spiritual or a psychological perspective, if a paradigm in use, namely the present paradigm, which is the allopathic practices that are in use, if they paralyze us or freeze our brain to consider other alternative treatments, then the emotion of fear and hopelessness sets in, and we feel hopeless to seek out other ways to manage our cancer. Now, if I were the oncologist doctor on any level, whether it's a phase 3 or 4 cancer matter, I would feel frustrated, limited, and disappointed to have to tell my patient that there's nothing more I can do for you. And if my system within which I operate prevents me from referring my patient for further evaluation and possible treatment, knowing my patient may die soon without another option, I would feel incompetent and maybe even irresponsible in this regard, particularly if I'm not referring that patient to some sort of good nutrition. Needed in these circumstances, in my opinion, is some sort of integrative medicine and some intersharing between holistic nutritionist doctors and medical doctors. There is enough evidence around today that we know a good nutrition protocol can help people like myself to recover. As a doctor then, if I were treating patients with cancer, I would feel guilty not to help others heal in a paradigm wherein the medical profession might face these issues head on instead of avoiding other alternate treatments. Of course, a doctor can always say the person died from natural causes flowing from the cancer itself. Or he could blame someone else because the patient died sooner than later. Again, that's intentional avoidance, burying one's head in the sand. In my mind, every physician in the United States needs to work on getting rid of whatever restrictive political legislation which disallows them the use of nutritional protocols. They need to confront the FDC, for their very narrow-minded approach in treating cancer. The paradigm today of using only chemo and radiation exclusively, hopefully, is almost over. The public, by and large, is supportive of a change, and so are many research-minded physicians. And I praise the research-minded physicians, the ones who are actually doing the research and making the discoveries that nutrition not only works, but there are many different remedies. One thing for certain, there is no chemical, food, or drink which will combat and cure cancers. Rather, what I discovered and what the researchers have discovered is it's a combination of factors which will do the job within the body. We have natural-made body cells which were created to stave off cancers, the T cells, the NK cells, the IGF-1 proteins, the hormone balancing in our system, and all the organs, all functioning in an organized pattern of activity. My own holistic doc is Dr. Ward Joyner. He's my partner on this show. He'll be on next week or in 2 weeks. He's a health nutrition therapist in Roseville, California. He assists people with all types of life-threatening diseases, including some cancer patients. He's an expert at looking at their blood readings and guides them so that they can improve their immune system. He possesses the expertise through his blood analysis to recognize the deficiencies in the blood, in the white blood cells, in the testosterone amounts, in the NK cells, T cells, and IGF-1. And best of all, he's able to recommend, I didn't say prescribe, he recommends the finest quality supplements and foods. He also utilizes a live red blood cell analysis, which can show a patient visually under a super-powered microscope and then projecting it up on a screen exactly what the patient lacks in his body for nutrition. This is analysis at a very deep cellular level. In my case, in my tests, as an example, some weeks it showed that I was not drinking enough water, hopefully to wash out the toxins from my system. In one of the tests, I was vitamin B deficient, which means I needed more vitamin B12 in my system. My hormonal balancing was off in some of the tests, and it did indicate in some cases a lack of correct digestion in such organs as the kidney, liver functions, and any cited any lack of absorption within a particular body organ. From that information, Dr. Joyner makes a recommendation of a natural food or supplement to correct the situation. This is a very scientific approach, not being used by many doctors in their practices. Remember, doctors don't study nutrition in medical school for the most part, and sadly, this is further evidence of the lack of competence among MDs in their practice of medicine. What might benefit cancer patients, I suggest, is, again, there needs to be a coordination between MDs and the holistic nutritionists. Now, I've had several red blood cell analyses done because of my type of cancer, which can spread so rapidly. I would go in there and they take a little prick of blood from your finger and put it under a microscope. I go in there, I'd say, every month or two to have it done. This test was a breath of fresh air for me. And the reason is I can visually observe under a microscope the expression of each cell to determine whether they are functioning well or are dysfunctional and need some immediate remedy. Again, I can look up on the screen and tell if the cells, the red blood cells, are clumping, if they're whole and healthy, or if they're too large or too small, and so forth. Yes, I get to know if my immune system is performing well or not. It eliminates a lot of fears and guesswork for both the patient and the holistic doctor. And it goes way beyond the notion of hoping to get well. The red blood cell analysis is proof positive of what is occurring in one's blood. This is truly evidence-based nutrition at its best. Now, will it predict whether cancer will reoccur? No, but it will describe some precursors which might provoke further metastasis of the cancer. In summary, like so many other recovering cancer people, I want some certitude that we have a measurable chance for survival with a minimum of suffering. The conventional approach to conquering cancer leaves one with too much guesswork, uncertainty, suffering, and pain are predictable. The naturopathic way, on the other hand, is much more predictable, not with absolute certainty, yet it lends hope to the cancer patient that they can do something to move toward developing a healthy immune system, and again, with no suffering. Then a realistic long-term healing can occur, and the likelihood of cancer regression is not apt to occur. Now, why is this so? Simply, a person has corrected his intake of foods and waters, which suppresses, or kills the DNA in cancer cells. Even if, in breast cancer as an example, a woman receives chemotherapy and it returns later, if she hasn't been eating correctly, certainly healthy nutrition could be the remedy. Isn't that right? I think so. Okay. So we'll move on here. I'm going to give an example here to help you think through this a minute. I don't know how many of you have ever known anyone who had chronic cancers in their system, such as Lance Armstrong had, the record-breaking national bike racer here in the U.S. But I borrowed from his book his description of what I call torture that he went through to recovery, because he had chemotherapy and a lot of subsequent suffering in order to overcome his cancer. In his book, titled, it's not about my bike or the bike, but my journey back to life, Lance describes the truth about chemotherapy better than anything I have read. And these are summary quotes of his struggle to survive from testicular cancer, lung cancer, and brain cancer. This is a quote from Lance. He, the doctor, would continue treating me with bleomycin, but his regime would be much more caustic than what Dr. Yeoman had prescribed. He said, quote, you will crawl out of here. I'm going to kill you. Every day I'm going to kill you and bring you back to life. We are going to hit you with chemo and then hit you again. You are not going to be able to walk. We're going to have to teach you how to walk after we are done, unquote. Lance continued, quote, because the treatments would leave me infertile, I would probably never have kids. The bleomycin would tear up my lungs and I would never be able to ride my bike again. The more he talked, the more I recoiled at my enfeeblement. I asked him why the treatment had to be so harsh. And the doctor said, your worst case, but this is your only shot at this hospital. Well, when Lance's male friend asked the doc about alternative treatments, the doctor cut him off. The doc proceeded to tell him he'd be better off at this Houston hospital than returning to Indianapolis to another recommended treatment. Well, Lance chose at the time seemed correct, not to be treated at the Houston hospital. Instead, returned to Dr. Nichols, who was the expert on testicular cancer in Indianapolis, Indiana. This doctor suggested a protocol of brain surgery first and then chemo. He said it was 50-50, but if it all worked, Lance might be able to ride bike again. There was another protocol of platinum-based chemo, VIP. And I won't read what VIP stands for. They're difficult chemical names, which was caustic in the short term, but which in the long term would not be so devastating as bleomycin, which the other doctor was giving him. The doctor predicted he would become more nauseous and vomiting, and it would have short-term discomfort. The doctor explained, we don't want to do radiation in the brain because it has long-term effects on the central nervous system, and some patients end up with intellectual deterioration and cognitive and coordination problems. The doctor added, there's a small risk of seizure after the brain surgery. Ultimately, Lance chose the Indiana Center for Surgery and Chemo. I'm going to stop here. We're going to take a two-minute break, and then we'll come back and cover some of these other Lance Armstrong statements, and then we're going to get into some other matters that I mentioned earlier. So hold on, everybody. I'll be back.
Hello, I am John Hall. I'm the author of the book, Beating Cancer Can Be Fun. I wrote a book on cancer fighting strategies for first-time diagnosed cancer patients. You heard it right. I'm the author. My name is John Hall. I recovered from metastatic melanoma over the last 3 years without chemo, without radiation, and without interferon. And I'm demonstrating in the book, Evidence-Based Nutrition Can Heal Cancers. In the book, you will learn why, in most cancer types, natural foods are superior to chemo or radiation. What is wrong with the medical community? Orthodox medicine could easily have a painless 90% cure rate on newly diagnosed cancer patients by using protocols I will recommend in my book, and yet they continue to use treatments which have less than a 3% cure rate. You can buy this book on ebook through Amazon.com, through the Nook, or at Barnes & Noble.
BBSRadio.com. If it's not mainstream, it could be here. Information and knowledge. Bringing humanity closer to truth and love.
Hello, John Hall returning from our break. We were talking and discussing Lance Armstrong's quotes about his path towards recovery, which is a very torturous path because he used chemotherapy, and he was just about ready to tell us that in his chapter 6 in his book, titled Chemo 1, he says, I want to share some details of what I had to undergo. Quote, the question was, which would the chemo kill first, the cancer or me? Lance said, my life became one long phase 4 drip, a sickening routine. If I wasn't in pain, I was vomiting. And if I wasn't vomiting, I was thinking about what I had had. I was wondering when it would be over. That's chemo for you. Chemo was an endless series of specific horrors until I began to think the cure was as bad as the disease itself. The effects of the treatments are loss of hair, a sickly pallor, and a wasting away. Chemo was a burning in my veins, a matter of being slowly eaten away from the inside out by a destroying river of pollutants until I didn't have any eyelashes left to bat. I had a continuous cough, hacking up black chunks of mysterious tar-like matter from deep in my chest. Chemo was a constant doubling over need to go to the bathroom. To cope with it, I imagined I was coughing out the burned-up tumors. When I went to the bathroom, I endured the acid sting in my groin by telling myself I was peeing out my dead cancer cells. I had no life other than chemo. I spent every winter and major holiday either on a chemo cycle or recovering from one. I slept 10 to 12 hours a night, and when I was awake, I was in a funk that felt like a combination of jet lag and a hangover. Chemo has a cumulative effect. I underwent 4 cycles in the space of 3 months, and toxins built up in my body with each phase. Each time I would check into the medical center on a Monday and take 5 hours of chemo for 5 straight days. When I was not on chemo, I was attached to a 24-hour phase four drip of saline solution and a chemical to protect my immune system from the most toxic effects of the isoflavonoid, which is damaging to the kidneys and bone marrow. The final 2 phases caused me so much pain and retching. The chemicals to treat the cancer came in plastic bags. The nurses had to wear special gloves to handle it. And on each one of these bags, the label read, quote, hazardous materials, unquote. Chemo doesn't just kill cancer cells. It kills healthy cells, too. It attacked my bone marrow, my muscle, my teeth, and the linings of my throat and stomach. And it left me open to all kinds of infection. My gums bled, and I got sores in my mouth, and I lost my appetite, which was a potentially serious problem. Without enough protein, I wouldn't be able to rebuild tissue after chemo had eaten through my hair, skin, and fingernails. Chemo is a very lonely process. My friend Oak, OCH, was there for me during the treatments. He knew that I had to have someone to bring my spirits up. He had cared for his dad, who had died from cancer. He read the newspaper to me and my mail, and he taught me how to play cards. He took me for walks around the hospital. Usually I would pass out as he entertained me. I used to call my disease the bastard. The tough part for me is I was losing my independence and self-determination. Oftentimes, just looking at food made me vomit even harder. I was losing weight, and then one day I noticed brown blotches on my skin. Then I was sure my body was deteriorating. To add to my frustration, one of the big companies who sponsored me in bike racing threatened to cut out my contract. As I mentioned earlier, I had no health insurance when first diagnosed. So now it had gone from bad to worse. After several months of treatment, Lance isn't speaking here, but I'll comment here, that after several months of treatment, Lance's blood readings began to improve. He finally went home to his mother's and tried biking. It was exhausting, and several times he had to lie on the grass thinking he might be dying. But he was determined to race professionally again, and he did. And he won 7 Tour de France's championships. As part of his story, he did mention the importance of not drinking coffee and refraining from red meats and cheeses and other things. Moreover, nutrition did play a part in his recovery. What needs emphasis here from in my point of view is that Lance made his choice of treatment, and he made it responsibly. He did it mostly the allopathic way and with some nutrition-based counseling. The nutrition-based counseling wasn't provided to him in the beginning, but only toward the end. The question remains, how would a nutrition protocol similar to the one that I personally had serve someone like Lance? Certainly it would have involved much less pain and suffering and with less risk to the long-term healing of the body. So that takes care of Mr. Lance Armstrong's story. And I want to move on into another section here of my talk tonight. And this is on how cancer research has failed us. My relationship with the medical doctors and the pharmaceutical industry is definitely ambivalent. What do I mean by that? I love them when they can help me, and I hate them, even though I don't like the word hate. I hate them when I see how they do damage to people's immune system and their body cells and their organs. During my first 4 months of recovery after the surgery, I had attended a cancer seminar here in Sacramento, mostly for women who had recently had cancer surgery, and they had chemotherapy and radiation. There were 43 women in the audience and 3 men in attendance at a major hotel. The main speaker was a female oncologist from Santa Barbara. After her talk, she fielded questions from the audience. She spoke about the hopes that researchers might someday find a cure for cancer. She spoke about the recent man-made drugs which women were being injected with. Now, here's the gist of this. Practically every question from the women in the audience was concerning, "Doctor, how do I overcome the pain or the discomfort from the drugs I am receiving?" Never once was there a mention of a cure. It was all about, how do I gain relief from the burning and the chemical poisoning and the overall weakness felt? Worst of all, there was no mention of nutrition in order to rebuild the immune system. So towards the end of the meeting, I raised my hand and I asked the doctor, "I noticed there's no discussion of nutrition to defeat cancer." Abruptly, instead of sharing what she knows about the results of some of the nutritional studies, she abruptly brushed the subject aside by saying, quote, "There's no research monies provided to fund nutritional research on cancers." Quote, and I replied, "And why not?" She changed to another topic and avoided me. In crude lay jargon, I felt the answer and avoidance on her part was a cop-out. It was deceptive, in my opinion. It was dishonest and manipulative. It was designed to avoid any intelligent discussion of the plethora of research which has been done for 40 to 50 years on the good results of cancer-defeating foods and antioxidants which help folks recover from their cancers worldwide. Now, why do I react so strongly? Because there was no meaningful dialogue going on at the meeting that day. Like so many medical doctors, she has narrowly defined an area of research. Like so many allopathics, she doesn't want to tell the folks the cold statistics provided by the National Cancer Institute. And this is a quote. "Of all the patients who receive chemo or radiation, 95% will be dead by the end of the fifth year," end of quote. And it's well documented they will suffer pain and misery from the drugs during those years. Specifically, for women diagnosed with cancer and those treated with chemo and or radiation, only 21% will recover after the fifth year. The other 79% will die before the end of the fifth year. To further reinforce my sentiments, 3 months after the surgery, my own oncologist referred me to an Asian oncologist, I think he was a urologist, for consultation and possible referral to the University of San Francisco Medical Research Program. Their program involves injections of chemicals into animals in an attempt to target and destroy cancer cells. I pointedly asked him, "Are there any successes with melanoma patients?" And his reply was, "Not yet." "And are there any side effects?" And he said, "Yes." So needless to say, I refused to accept any referral from him. I told him I wasn't willing to be one of his guinea pigs. He was from the Far East, an Asian doctor. And he did share that the present doctors in the U.S. don't allow any discussion of nutritional aspects of treating cancer in their practices. And he said, quote unquote, our union doesn't permit it. Now, what he meant by their union was the silent conspiracy that will not allow a discussion of it. They have a lock on the monies received from cancer donations to the universities and from the huge profits of medical doctors, which they earn via their narrow definition of what might cure cancer, namely chemo, radiation, or surgery. Incidentally, since then, my internet research reveals there are some MDs who have had the courage to step outside their quote-unquote union, and they advise patients nutritionally for their cancer conditions and other autoimmune diseases. Very few, though, yet still the bulk of research monies for cancers comes not to fund alternative foods, but rather to continue down the same track which fails to truly help cancer patients defeat their disease. I also learned recently that in Germany, nutrition is part of the protocol that medical doctors in practice are able to render to their patients. And that exists in other countries. The U.S. is just, I don't know what the word is. I better not say it over the air here. It's probably a nasty word. Again, it's still incredible that after 50 years and billions of dollars contributed to the researchers in cancer, that practically no progress has been made. We need some leadership and truth-telling in Washington and amongst those who have worked so hard in the naturopathic field. I personally would not be alive today if I had chosen the narrow and limited path of the allopathic doctors and the companies who advised them. And it's also evident that the medical graduate schools specializing in oncology definitely need to be regulated by the government, since they refuse to self-regulate their profession. They have walked free from having to use their Hippocratic oath. They are not treating the whole man. They are not using an integrative approach as a model to represent their clients or patients with the whole story on curing cancer. Yes, they studied a lot of chemistry in school, and then when they left, they avoided the practical application of the subject when it comes to seeking remedies outside their narrow-minded profession as it applies to cancer research. It is the total immune system which needs focus here, not just firing bullets at isolated cancers. I am alive today because my holistic doctor and I are appropriately focused. I was abandoned by the allopathics because they have no cure. They sell hope only, but it's a veiled attempt to cloud the issue. We who have cancer deserve more. We need the best science can offer. Scientific investigation requires an open mind, and science today in the U.S. is intentionally avoiding the study of food, nutrition, supplements, and waters with which to attack cancer cells. Here's a little story from Italy about Dr. Tullio Sammancini, an Italian oncologist. He tells why he believes cancers are fungi, and he has a unique treatment. It took a European researcher and a medical doctor to uncover the fact that, according to him, the 100-year-old hypothesis that has led science in circles is incorrect. Scientists thought cancers were human cells multiplying without limits. And he says that's an unproven theory that no one has proven yet. He contends there is no evidence at all for the genetic hypothesis. And this gets proven out with the fact that orthodox cancer treatments don't work very well, especially when you look beyond the 5-year survival statistics. He says modern orthodox oncology is a failure, and every doctor knows it in his heart and soul. Here's a quote from Dr. Sammancini. He says, my work is based on the conviction, supported by many years of observations, comparisons, and experiences, that the cause of the tumor is to be sought in the vast world of the fungi. the most adaptable, aggressive, and evolved of microorganisms known in nature, unquote. The aggression he refers to is so great as to allow it, with only a cellular ring made up of three units, to tighten in its grip, capture and kill its prey in a short time, in spite of a struggling prey. Fungus seems to be the logical candidate as a cause of neoplastic proliferation, he says. What describes yeast and fungi invasion perfectly is the metastatic cancer cells eat away through the protective barriers of an organ and overrun other tissues and organs. The reasoning here is that fungi, during their life cycle, depend on other living beings, which must be exploited for their feedings. The shape of the fungi is imposed in the environment in which the fungi develop. Fungi can modify their own metabolism in order to overcome the defense mechanisms of the host. Doctors know that fungal infections are extremely contagious, and they go hand in hand with leukemia too in children. If a child has had a bone marrow transplant and then gets infected with fungi, his chances for recovery are minimal. His chances for living with most antifungal agents are near zero. Of course, we're talking about pharmaceutical agents and not the miracle discoveries of Dr. Simon Saini using sodium bicarbonate as the remedy for fungi. When a Dr. Kaufman wrote his article on fungi and cancer, a lady phoned into the radio station talk show, and she told the story that her three-year-old daughter had been diagnosed with leukemia the year before, and the mother was convinced of the antifungal drugs coupled with the natural immune system therapy had saved her daughter's life. Another lady, having heard the story, had bone cancer and asked the doctor for an antifungal drug prescription. The results showed it killed the fungus and the cancer. She had told the doctor that the medication was for a yeast infection. However, when she could no longer get the medicine, the cancer came back. Her doctor thought that surely an antifungal pills should have cured her yeast infection. Dr. Kaufman contended that the reason the medication worked was she did not have a yeast infection. She had a vaginal infection. He felt the fungal infection of the bone may have been mimicking bone cancer. According to Dr. Kaufman, many cancer patients find the true fungal link to their cancer only to succumb to heart disease or immune deficiency caused by traditional cancer treatment. Quote, if this were the case were an isolated event, it might be referred to as coincidental. And he says, I've been able to plead with doctors of advanced cancer patients to at least try antifungal drugs for their cancer patients. Dr. Kaufman recommends a reading from the book, The Germ That Causes Cancer, to demonstrate that the current cancer research is targeting the wrong cells. The whole point of his article is to show that cancer is a fungus and is not caused by a fungus. Dr. Simon Saini can be heard and seen demonstrating the fungi colonies and their destruction with sodium bicarbonate on http://video.google.it/videoplay. At the same site, a breast cancer patient in Europe shares her success with bicarbonate. These videos reveal an astonishing truth about cancer and its safe, successful treatment. So go into your internet and look up Dr. Simon Saini on YouTube, and you'll see a lot of his discussions. Doctors and medical scientists have made the mistake of assuming that fungal conditions develop after cancer treatments have begun. Researchers contend that cancer therapies aimed at destroying cancer also destroy the immune system of the patients, leaving them vulnerable to yeast and fungi, which multiply out of control. They consider these invading colonies to be secondary to the actual cancer. Again, orthodox cancer treatments are not working out well. So what's the essence of Dr. Simon Saini's message? Is that the only solution to cancer, if it is a fungus, is sodium bicarbonate. And according to him, doctors are not very good at diagnosing fungal infections because their medical school training is based solely on the role of bacteria and viruses in the areas of infectious diseases. Fungi has been forgotten forever since the advent of antibiotics, and this is perhaps one of the biggest mistakes of the allopathic medicine, according to Dr. Simoncini. The overuse of antibiotics can lead to deadly fungal infections. Current tests for detecting the presence of fungi are both terribly scant and sorely antiquated. This is a serious problem, for fungi are late-stage infections that are provoking a wide range of life-threatening diseases. He adds, Dr. Simoncini adds, that the antifungins that are currently on the market, in fact, don't have the ability to penetrate the masses since they're conceived to act only at a stratified level of epithelial type. In order to achieve the most detrimental effect on the cancer tumors, the sodium bicarbonate must be in direct contact with the damaged tissue, according to him. It's also possible, with the use of catheters, to insert this solution into the arteries. Further drip infusions, irrigations, and infiltrations could be used in places where the tumors have grown. In addition, according to a Dr. Napatulung, bicarbonate physiology is entirely ignored in diabetes as it is in medicine in general. Who would stop long enough to think deeply enough to make the connections between acid-producing diets, which are in junk foods, and the destruction of the pancreas? To quote the doctor, quote, "The pancreas is killed if the body is metabolically acid as it tries to patient is killed if the body is metabolically acid as it tries to maintain bicarbonates. Without the bicarbonates, insulin becomes a problem, and hence diabetes becomes an issue. What flows from there is a chain reaction of inflammatory reactions throughout the body." So those of you with that condition know what that means. The reactions would be included in the brain as the acidic conditions begin to prevail. There are many cases of diabetes and cancers, almost as many as all the heavy metals. Toxic chemicals and radiation contamination that will affect, weaken, and destroy pancreatic tissues. Bicarbonate physiology, on the other hand, is foundational, meaning it forms the carpet that those poisons walk on. When the body is bicarbonate sufficient, it is more capable of resisting the toxicity of chemical insults. That is why the Army suggests its use to protect the kidneys from radiological contamination. Much the same applies to magnesium levels and iodine. They all protect us from the assault of noxious everyday chemicals we are subject to in our air, food, and water. In conclusion, the research doctors are reminding us that the over-acidification of the body is the single underlying most fundamental cause of all diseases, and then it is easy to understand bicarbonate physiology. I personally have used baking soda at different times and follow my acid alkaline system checks frequently. It is one of my markers to know my cancers won't return. Also, as the economic crisis explodes forward, family finances are forced more and more to skimp on medications and physician visits and preventive screening in order to pay their bills. Orthodox thinking says that the more effective meds should cost more, and they're saying the lesser ones don't work well. In fact, you can buy baking soda bicarbonate as cheap as $2 a pound in the stores, and the use of a safer and very inexpensive product. Natural product, and this is a natural product that just makes more sense than to spend thousands of dollars on lesser effective medications. This author, this is my closing statement, this author cares more about treating the masses with what works at a reasonable cost. traditional medicine is bent towards serving the affluent, not the masses, in their pursuit of good health for patients. And it's a very costly project for anyone who goes only for chemicals. Next week, the next presentation, I'm going to cover the subject of shark cartilage as a possible cure for cancer. Americans have been misled again by our leadership in the FDC. They're saying that shark cartilage doesn't work, and I'm going to show you some of the research which demonstrate that shark cartilage can be very effective. So that's all for tonight. I believe Dr. Joyner will do the next broadcast, which will be 2 weeks from this Monday at 7 p.m. on Station 2. Thank you for listening, and eventually we're going to set up a process where people can call us with questions. Right now, we haven't arrived there yet, but I wish you all a very good week, and I hope you learned what you need to know from our program tonight. Good night now. Bye.